Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Women Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
When we come back, I'm going to keep this video up so you'll see it live.
Yeah, greetings, everyone. This is Real Radio Talk, and I am your host, Lee Gibbs, and we have, I guess, Jeff Carroll calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and he's going to talk about his sci-fi books that he's written, and some of his titles are Time Travel, Horror, Cyberpunk, Outer Space, Zombies, Apocalypse, and a few more going on there. And he's also a writer, a filmmaker, a comic book head, a leader in the black sci-fi movement. So we're going to let him come on and introduce himself, and he can tell us about time travel. I would like to hear what that book is about.
Well, peace, first of all, Hotep, and Happy New Year to all your listeners. To you, it's a pleasure, and thank you for having me as a guest on your show. I am in a period of my life where I found that everything has come together. Science fiction is something that I recently was turned on to, but I realized that I've been into science fiction my whole life. Time travel is just one dimension of, or one subgenre of science fiction, and it includes, you know, it's probably one of the most challenging stories to write because some people argue that as the sun and the earth rotate around each other, which is almost like a spiral, for you to go and come back in the same spot in time, is really difficult and impossible for you to come and leave like in H.G. Wells' Time Machine. But, again, that's one of the oldest time travel stories, and I think also the lore of time travel stories is we all always suffer from hindsight being 2020. We want to go back in time. We want to adjust things. Some of the things that we experience, we feel that if we could have just done, would have been in a better place now. And it's more than just, you know, the winning lottery ticket, you know. So that's the lore of time travel. And my first time travel story is called Billy the Bully Beater. And it's a story of a that was featured in an anthology of black sci-fi by the Black Science Fiction Society. And it was cool. I enjoyed writing it. I was inspired by Doctor Who, which is another time travel person. And I really wasn't even watching Doctor Who that much. I just noticed that he was a time traveler, and he used his the police station, the TARDIS, to travel in. And I said, wow, you know, I got a time travel story. And, you know, mine is pretty much straightforward. It's a fun story about a young man who is gifted in size and is able to fight well. And we kind of know a lot of these brothers in our communities. And he gets tired of fighting just reputation. And he decides to protect other kids from people that are bothering them and other bullies. So he decides he can beat up bullies and he won't get in trouble for it. And he gets selected to be a time traveler. And that's pretty much the story.
Did you see the movie The Time Traveler's Wife and Donnie Darko?
I did not, you know, I go to the movies every week, right? And I didn't see either one of those movies. But I do remember The Time Traveler's Wife in terms of, I think the case of Benjamin Buttons comes into my mind or something like that. But reference me.
Well, it was about a man who he never really aged because he's always swapping into different timelines. And he met a woman, and they had a daughter together, but she had a few miscarriages before she actually had a child with him because the baby was a time traveler, and sometimes the baby would forget to come back into the mother's womb, so she would have miscarriages, and he would just show up in someone's living room, show up in the backyard. You know, he just, it seemed like he couldn't control his time traveling. But it's on, because it came out a few years ago, you can get it on DVD or find it on, like, those free movie websites. I know the YouTube movie have it. And Donnie Darko is another, is real deep, though. Donnie Darko, a little bit more metaphysical with Donnie Darko.
I have to check him out. I remember, I think it was A&E, had a time
travel. Donnie Darko went back in time.
Oh, okay. One of the things I noticed in a lot of our black sci-fi writers is when they go back in time, many times they go back to the 60s, 50s, and even slavery. And I'm curious of time periods before the 300 years of us being here in America. I will go back to Native American, pre-colonial, or pre-slavery, pre-Arab invasion. I will go back to Egypt. Those are some of the areas that I would love to go back to and travel in time.
Right, right. Before all the confusion.
Yeah, that was the blemish in our history. We're still trying to recover from that now. We have some glorious times, but the colonial times, those are rough years.
No, I want to end, man.
So it's like, you know, Back to the Future, how the mad scientists figured out a way to go back into the future and change things for the present. And some people don't think that there are certain vehicles and portals that you could create to make that a reality. Like, although you're talking sci-fi, non-fiction or whatever, well, fiction, it really is a that's really a real reality.
Yep. I think when it comes to, I guess, mainstream time travel story, I definitely was, I saw all of the Back to the Futures. You know, that was when I was in high school, middle school, and I saw all of those in the 80s. I think the biggest one for me that I liked or that comes to mind was the Butterfly Effect. And that was really cool. Austin Kutcher, I think he was in it.
I never saw that. I have to watch that.
He kept trying to fix things by going back in time, and it messed something else up. And eventually, he was a paraplegic, and he wasn't even able to go back in time.
Wow. It's this man on YouTube who says he's traveled back in time several times, and then someone was actually interviewing him. He's kind of undercover because the government, he was working with the government doing his time traveling, but someone was able to get an interview through him. Huh?
I think I saw that video on YouTube as well. There's a lot of conspiracy theories that, you know, as a science fiction writer, you get to play out, and that is definitely one of them. And I think he's spawned a lot of movies with that interview that he was coming back in time.
No, he didn't do any movies. He works with the actual federal government. He never did any movies. Go ahead.
No, what I was saying was, I don't know if that is true or not. It looks really convincing. But that whole video and his whole story is, I think, something that has been played out in movies and has inspired a lot of time travel stories.
Right. Yeah, he did his interview with like a hood over his face. You couldn't even see his face. All you hear is his voice. You see him, but you don't see his face. I don't know if that's the same person that you saw.
Yeah, I did see him. I think for me, time travel reminds me a little bit of the Terminator, and how the sister who inspired the Terminator and inspired the Matrix put it together. And I think if you're able to travel in time, would you be able to travel with your clothes? Would you be able to travel with your memory? Would you be able to travel with a weapon? I don't think so. I think I don't think that is how it operates, whether you would be fully reformed back into the same body that you were in. I don't know. My beliefs are out when it comes to time travel. Do you believe in it?
That if you was to time travel, you would still have your same clothing on when you return back?
Or do you believe in time travel in general?
Yeah, because the ancient Mayans talk about the Zuvuya, where because they're like the galactic scouts of time, and they speak of those type of things that happen in those ancient times. You know, Aladdin with the flying carpet. You know, that's all of that represents a time travel, but they just turned it into a cartoon, and people don't put the connection together.
Okay.
And, you know, there was at one point we didn't even speak. We was talking telepathy, you know.
Right.
Was, you know, I could be all the way in Spain. You could be all the way in New York, and we could have a conversation without us actually talking. So, I mean, you just would know how to tap into certain portals and certain parts of the world that are high vibratory with those portals, to be able to do that. I mean, most of the time when they make movies, the movies be based on some true facts somewhere down the line.
Well, I know for me, I haven't been in Hollywood writing rooms, but I do know for me, it is I exaggerate and I speculate on things that stem from something that's rumored or a little history fact that most people don't know. And the illusion is really like I know what I'm talking about and that this thing is real. But many times it's something that I've totally made up and there's no proof around it. But the goal is to get you to believe it. And I know that's what I do. I don't know if I've ever really been successful at it, but I know when I wrote about my book, The Harlem Shake, there is a fault line on 125th Street, and all, as any other fault line, it's more likely to vibrate than solid land, so the possibility of there being an earthquake is high. However, will it be as disastrous in my story as in my story? I don't know. Part of my skeptic mind when it comes to time travel is if any past civilization had the ability to travel in time, how did they allow their civilizations to fall? And or is there something within the time traveling dynamics that counters the altering of the future or time? Meaning, if you go back and you think you can change time, are you really able to change it? Or will something just change it back to normal or change it back? So I don't
know. Well, you time travel when you sleep every night. You know, when you sleep every night, mm-hmm. you time travel. That's where you get your deja vus from, and I've been here before. This feels so real. I can finish this sentence.
Right.
So you when you go to sleep, you leave your body, and your spirit travels. So you're always doing some kind of form of time traveling, whether you remember your dreams or not. So the time travel, the essence of it, it has some truth to it. Now, how the movies make it look, that probably is propaganda, but you time travel every time you go to sleep. And that's not a lie. You know, that's not made up. That's not Hollywood. That's what everybody does. Even the people who make Hollywood movies, when they sleep, their spirit time travels. Their spirit travels.
And I think just like with probably anything else, is a skill that we have to not necessarily weaponize, but learn to use for our betterment. And it's probably something as a skill that we have as celestial beings that we just don't know how to use anymore. You know, because I'm not happy with the situation that we're in right now. And if there was a way to time travel to solve it, I would want to do that. And I know many other revolutionaries, civil rights activists, if they were able to do that, then they would do it as well. Otherwise, it's just cosmetic, and it really doesn't help us out in any way. And I don't believe it's like that. I believe that it could be something that we could use. That's why I still challenge all these prior civilizations that may have had this ability or knew how to use it and weren't able to protect themselves from other cultures that were invading them that I don't think knew how to use it.
Well, they know how to use it because they actually did the time traveling. They just can't change destiny. Because what's to be is going to be. It doesn't mean they didn't travel yet. It just meant that they weren't able to change what was going to happen. They were able to see it, but they weren't able to change it because that's what is destined to happen. Like you was destined to be born. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So what is
slavery,
the apocalypse about?
Oh, the post-apocalypse? That's another just a future projection. We in sci-fi have scenario people that to do professional role playing to solve solutions to answer questions. The apocalypse is my way of throwing some ideas out there of the end of civilization as we know it, not the total desecration of life on the planet, but the destruction of civilization as we know it, meaning no cities, no villages, no towns, people scattered around trying to survive without produced food, without food plants, without all the other things, without running water, without electricity, all those different things is part of the world building for my post-apocalyptic story. So if you think of TV shows like The Walking Dead or Mad Max, that's kind of the world that I built for my story.
And that's what the zombie links into that too?
Well, I have zombies or infected people in my Harlem Shake series, the post-apocalyptic series, but in my story, Rashida the Zombie Killer, that is an actual full-out zombie story. That's like Dawn of the Dead. That's like World War Z, Quarantine, 28 Days Later. Yeah, Rashida the Zombie Killer is straight zombie outbreak that hits New York City.
And then that's the horror blends in with that too, the horror book.
Yeah, in terms of, well, there's scenes in Rashida that are scary. There's a part of the story where they're going through the Lincoln Tunnel and there's no power. That's a little bit of scariness in there. But in terms of horror, which one?
Rashida, what was that about?
Okay, well, in the story, Rashida the Zombie Killer, there's an Egyptian musical device that is recently discovered in Egypt and brought back to the United States that realigns human vibrations. So it addresses multiple sclerosis, it addresses Parkinson's, ADHD, lupus, and other neurotic diseases or conditions. And if it's played correct, it can address those and correct your vibration. However, if played the wrong way, it can corrupt your vibration and turn you into what is considered a zombie or an enraged person, a crazy person. And in Rashida the Zombie Killer, her boyfriend is a music producer who is trying to, who wants to use the music, the musical device to calm down the hip-hop community, to bring about peace and calm. And he figures if he can get the musical device and put it behind a hip-hop record, when people hear it, when the young people hear it, they will be calm. But unfortunately, the musical device gets in the wrong hands, and it's up to Rashida and her crew to stop them from playing this device.
So how did Rashida turn into a zombie?
Well, she's the killer of the zombies. That's why it's called Rashida the Zombie Killer.
The zombies. Okay. Right,
yeah,
right.
She has to stop them from, stop them from playing the musical device or stop them from getting people to hear the musical device and thus being turned into zombies. So without giving, like, the whole too much more of the story, that's really what it is. You know, she's got to stop them.
Right. So what is the Afrofuturism about?
The Afrofuturism is not a particular book of mine. It is an element that I apply in both the Harlem Shake and my other book, Welcome to Boss Lady's Planet. Boss Lady's Planet takes place in the far future where we have terraformed another group of planets, another solar system. And in this group of planets, they have just finished a war with another life form. And they needed to use robot soldiers to win the war. Now that they've won the war, they have a surplus of robot soldiers. And they the company that developed the robot soldiers has made a proposition to the Federation of their planet to use the robot soldiers as police officers on the planet. And Boss Lady's planet, or the planet that Boss Lady is on, is chosen to be the first planet with these robot police officers on there. And we call that Afrofuturism because it takes place in the future. And I have a whole lot of little devices in there. There's a whole lot of other things going on in there. So it's really cool. But it's really just predictions on the future and things of that nature.
And that future is like in 20 years from now type of future, or?
No, it's a couple of thousand years in the future. It's like Star Trek in that type of future, even further in the future than Star Trek.
Oh, I see. Moving into another galaxy type of other future.
Yep. It's another planetary system of planets that were terraformed by Earth. So it's humans living on these planets, but they brought life to them. So they left Earth and they went out there to those planets to live. And I have another Afrofuturistic story in my anthology, my collection of short stories, Sci-Fi Street, entitled The Church of God in Space. And that's another Afrofuturism story.
So what about cyberpunk? What is cyberpunk about?
Cyberpunk is a term that a group of black science fiction writers out of Atlanta, Milton Davis, Balo Goon, came up with after wanting to write in a futuristic technological world that mainstream science fiction calls cyberpunk. So what they did was say, if we're going to do it a black version, we're going to call it cyber funk. And then they put that funk on it. And those are multicultural stories in a cyber-controlled world with robots, technological enhancements, legs, arms, eyes, other technological augmentations. So that's the world. And you interface with robots. You interface with buildings, you interface with your car. All those things are part of the cyberpunk world. And I have a story I think it's the first black cyberpunk anthology called The City. And my story is called A Dreamer's Recall.
And that's the essence of cyberpunk.
Yes.
And then the outer space, what would that book be about?
In terms of outer space stories?
Yeah, the outer space story.
Well, my Welcome to Boss Lady Planet is set in outer space. But my story, The Church of God in Space, it's a short story in my collection, but it is a church that, as a black mega church, like imagine T.D. Jakes Church, now international and larger than the Catholic Church. And in this story, they develop a space program. They see find life on another planet and decide to bring the word of God to the life on that planet. and they send a ship full of missionaries to bring life to that planet. And that's why it's called Church of God of Space. And the story is very much like the story of Noah's Ark. And the experiences they have is the ship travels for a year before it reaches the planet. And their experiences, I wrote based on my readings and studies on Noah's Ark.
Is that like a Star Trek too? Is that similar to that start, how the scene would look more Star Trek-ish?
And yes, in a way, because it is space, but there is no, it is like Star Trek in the sense that they do go to another planet and, it's, and find life. But in terms of them exploring and having battles in space, no, there's real. There's really no threat. The reason why they're leaving Earth at the time that they're leaving is because there's a comet coming to Earth, and the Earth defenses, once they destroy the comet, will leave too much debris in space for them to launch their ship for the next 10 years. So they decide to leave early to get out of the Earth's atmosphere before the comet is destroyed, and they won't be able to, and space is full of debris. So that's really it. But other than that, there's no Klingons or Romulans like they have in Star Trek.
And then the robot, that will be more like a time, a future Star Trek timeline too?
Yeah, in my story, Welcome to Boss Lady's Planet, I actually have a few. The whole story is about them using these robots, and so as they are implementing and bringing the robots to the planet, there's a lot of elements that I play out in terms of scenarios of robots. So, and I also have another story called The Programmable Man. And that is Afrofuturism, it's robots, it's all in one. And that story is in my book, The Sci-Fi Streets. And in that story, I have a young lady who's single who decides to get a program called the Feelings Program installed in her security robot. And it turns the security robots into the ultimate love machine. And we're seeing that happening now. That's not even science fiction anymore. It's actually science. It's actual fact, because they have sex robots now.
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago on Facebook. A black dude actually went and bought him one.
Yep. There's a bunch of emails and posts that I've seen very recently where now the female sex robot community is buying more than the male robot community. So you're seeing more male robots out there than there are female robots. But I say that it doesn't matter because it's a robot. So you can get a robot with male and female organs on it. What is just a latex cover? You could be male on one side and flip it over and be female on the other.
Oh, my goodness. That is just so crazy.
And see, the thing is, that's what I get to do as a sci-fi writer. I get to think of how would this play out? How would this manifest itself? How would this appear in the world? And how will it affect the world? So those things are real. Or those things, the way we play them out, not necessarily are real. The scenarios are real that we think of, but, you know, we don't know what will happen.
Because I'm thinking maybe the robot story would be like something like Rosie from the Jetsons, where you have a robot cleaning up your house.
Well, we got a Roomba. We got Roombas already. You know, and the Jetsons was definitely futurism, you know, and that has inspired a lot. We all grew up on Elroy, you know, and the Jetsons. His boy Elroy, he had the robot dog too, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. So, yeah, they played it out in one dynamic. We have the Roombas. It's not necessarily called Rosie, but they clean your floors. And as far as walking robots that clean the house, that's going to be real interesting.
Well, I remember when Rocky, I think it was Rocky II, when he fought against the Russian, he had a robot in his, taking care of his house.
Yep. Definitely was. And that robot looks very much like some of the robots that they're developing now in MIT and some of those other places. If you see those four-legged robots that are running around, in China, I think they have a two-legged robot that can do flips. So some of those look like the robots that they had in these shows. And really, a lot of science fiction writers travel to technology conventions, and they see some of the things that are coming out, especially the filmmakers. So they get inspired by what they see coming out. And sometimes they are ahead of science, and they can design things that will inspire the real engineers and the real developers.
Do you think that there are robots that's like Rosie from the Jetsons?
I think if you did have an intelligent robot, you would want them to do more than just clean the house. So if there is a robot
like
Rosie,
she also cooks for them too. And wash the dishes and did the laundry.
She replaced the home domestic person, the butler, the maid.
What the mother should be doing, she's doing it.
Yes, I do think they may have robots do that in the future, but I think there are probably more things that robots would be asked to do. Once they're able to do things like put clothes in the dryer and fold them, man, once you can do that, and then in terms of cooking, I think what we're developing is from the other end where cooking will become more simplified for even humans to do it. So you'll have self-cutting things, you'll load stuff in your refrigerator, in your food storage unit, and then they will almost be like an assembly line. And that will be a robot too. But if you see some of the videos, they have these robot arms come out from the countertop, from the wall, and they start cutting things up and putting things together. I think that probably would happen, in a different way. So I think Rosie would exist, but I think it would manifest itself in different ways.
Right, they'll have roles for different reasons. So what about your comic books?
Well, I have always wanted to get into comic books, and I did two comic books prior. One was a little 12-page pitch comic book, and then I did a printed up an issue of my Gold Digger Killer, 25 pages of Imani the Killer. It was a follow-up to my movie. But back in November, I was finally able to get out my full comic book, and it's a collection of short stories called Horror Street. And in Horror Street, I have stories that were inspired by screenplays that I've written and stories that I told orally. And then I have the two issues of Imani the Killer that are in there as well.
Three comic books that you wrote.
The two ones that I came out earlier, I republished them into this book. This book is 100 pages. So it's, it has those two stories and four more other stories in there.
So it's comic book like Marvel Comics?
Yep, just like that. They're, you know, probably, you know, more like, you know, yeah, Marvel Comics is one. They're not all superhero stories. They're all horror stories. So you have one story about the Black Headless Horseman, and that's called Blackjack. There's a story about a beer that turns people into zombies called 40 Ounces of Death. And then there's a story about a fraternity of vampires called Vamp 5 Vamp. And they're all horror stories, but different elements of horror.
Oh, okay. And the Street Story, that's a novel that you wrote? That's more kind of like real life?
Which one, Golden Gate Killer?
It happened on Negro,
Negro, yeah.
Oh, it happened on Negro Mountain?
you're not misstating that. I that story came to me after being a road manager and driving to West Virginia from New Jersey. We drove through Western Maryland, and we ran into this place called Negro Mountain. And I couldn't believe it was
wow.
a real place. And when I got home, I did some research on it and found that it was named after a group of freed or escaped Africans, very much around the time of 40 Acres and a Mule. And they left the plantation and established a colony. At the time, Negro Mountain was on the free side of the Mason-Dixon line. And they ended up having to defend their colony from Native Americans and slave catchers, and their leader died defending the mountain or their settlement. And they ended up naming the mountain after him. They say it's after him, but the mountain is called Negro Mountain. So it really should be more named after the group of people, you know. And the way I see it
yeah.
is if you were in that area, you would probably say, don't go up in that mountain. Those Negroes are up there, and they'll kill you. And so
mm-hmm.
the name of Negro Mountain is stuck, and it's a real place in Western Maryland.
Western Maryland, so that's like towards the Virginia line?
Yep, Western Maryland, right on near West Virginia and
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
not as far south as Virginia. But it's a part of the Appalachian Mountain Trail.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So that's based on the true story.
Well, a true place. I fictionalized the story.
And what is Sci-Fi Street?
Well, Sci-Fi Streets is my collection of short stories. And in that, I have the...
Mm-hmm.
Time travel story. I have the robot story called the Programmable Man, and I also have the story about the church, the mega church with the space program called the Church of God in Space. But I also have in there a pirate story, and I have a story from following up on Negro Mountain, and I also have a story on my Thug Angel character, the vampire and werewolf killer. So
what's
I have
that
all those
about,
stories.
The
and
vampire?
The Thug Angel, Rebirth of a Gargoyle, was really my first science fiction book that I wrote, and in that story, I have a... emissary of Imhotep, which was based on the god Ptah, if you're familiar with Semitic religion, the Egyptology, the god Ptah is the one that takes the spirits after they die to the wave
underworld
against the feather of Maat. And he has emissaries called Otums, and I call them in my story gargoyles, because Otums are responsible for bringing the spirit to the judgment experience. So I created the theology that those spirits don't only escort us to our judgment, they also protect us throughout life from immortal predators. So in Thug Angel, he's a gargoyle who protects a certain area in New York, and when his daughter gets caught up with vampires and werewolves, he ends up going full man on fire and gets crazy, like Taken.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an action story set with vampires and werewolves.
So the movie Taken is about vampires and werewolves? Because I didn't see that movie.
No, Taken is just the movie Taken with starring Liam Neeson is about a father whose daughter goes on vacation in Europe and gets caught up in the sex slavery, sex trafficking. And he's an assassin, secret agent or whatever for the United States government. He goes over there and rips apart Europe to find her and see if he can save her.
So I have to watch that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie. And you know what Man on Fire is, right? Did you ever see Man on Fire with
Denzel?
That's the
movie that Denzel Washington, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those two movies were inspirational in my story of Thug Angel. And it's kind of the reason why I write science fiction in the first place, because I know
Angel.
There's a lot of stories out there. Excuse me?
You wrote a book called Thug Angel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my first science fiction book, Thug Angel, Rebirth of a Gargoyle.
And what is that movie about?
That's what I'm telling you.
I mean, that book about, talk about movie.
Yes, Thug Angel is an immortal who lived from the time of Imhotep and King Djoser, the builder of the first pyramid. And he's lived all the way through the fall of Egypt, across Africa, to West Africa, and then across the Middle Passage and the Atlantic Ocean. And now he lives in New York, where he still protects human spirits from vampires, werewolves, and other demons. And he's got a 16-year-old daughter who finds herself caught up with vampires and werewolves.
And she turns into a vampire?
I'm not going to give that away. You got to read the story for that. But she does come into contact with them. I'm going to tell you that much. She does come into contact with them.
She comes in contact with them, like the movie Twilight?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not dealing with 107-year-old pedophile vampires. My vampires are not interested in dating a 16-year-old girl. They are more so interested.
Oh, yeah,
my vampire
old.
Is...
Yeah.
Yeah,
age.
Yeah, my vampires and werewolves and Thug Angel are into controlling the city, locking things down. If you ever saw a Blade movie, think of Blade. That's how Thug Angel gets down. The vampires are evil, not lovemaking.
Right. So the street story, those are part of your novels.
Yeah, the street stories are all short stories. I wanted to write and try to find out which subgenre of sci-fi I really would enjoy, And so I tried to write in as many subgenres of sci-fi as I could. So I got pirate, horror, vampire, werewolf, ghost stories, robots, space, you name it. They're all in there. It's not all of them. It's only 13 stories in the book. But each one is different, and each one is a different subdivision of science fiction. And I just need about 3 more short stories for the next collection of short stories. And I have about 5 or 6 of them that I've already finished, and I'm waiting to put those into a book. Can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, yeah. I was saying, what about the ghost story? Is it like the movie Ghost Story where people tell their real-life experiences with ghosts, if they lived in a haunted house or someone died in the house and they see that person?
It Happened on Negro Mountain is my ghost story. And in It Happened on Negro Mountain, I have the spirit of the African that escaped slavery that died protecting the mountain coming back to protect people that live in the modern village of Negro Mountain. So the story is of a drug dealer from Baltimore who is trying to get away from his city and let the rival gangs kill each other off. And he decides to hide out in Negro Mountain to avoid all of the crossfire. And it just so happens in Negro Mountain, the spirit of the fallen African still protects the mountain. So the legend in Negro Mountain is bad things. Negro Mountain is a place where bad things happen to bad people. So when he goes up there, different from, say, Amityville Horror, where the people were innocent, these are people that are necessarily not good experiencing a ghostly experience from a good ghost, per se.
So is that true, though, that the mountain was haunted? It's not haunted, but people say they see the ex-slaves?
I actually don't know. I mean, I know I made it up, but I've been trying to contact paranormal investigators, ghost hunters, even the black guys, the ghost brothers that do paranormal investigations. And I want to go out to Negro Mountain and, you know, the ones on TV, you know, they have a couple of YouTube
brothers?
Shows. Yeah, it's called the Ghost Brothers.
What's their name?
The Ghost Brothers.
I got to look them up, too.
Yeah, the Ghost Brothers. I don't know where they're out of. I would say Atlanta, but I may be wrong. But the Ghost Brothers, I try to reach out
like
to all of them.
Blinking.
And see. What do you say?
Sound like your phone blinked out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have it plugged up so that I can check the battery.
Wait, go ahead. You said you was trying to contact them.
Yeah, I'm trying to contact anybody to see if they would be interested in going up to Negro Mountain with me. I don't have no problems with Negro Mountain.
Right.
I would love, you know.
Wow. Let me know if they do contact you back.
Oh, yeah. you definitely will hear about it because I will put it on blast. I'm hoping that, you know.
They haven't replied yet.
No, they haven't. As far as I know, nobody has. They go into places that really have. See, if there is a ghost in Negro Mountain, it's not a bad ghost. And it's not a demonic spirit. So a lot of these shows really want to go after ghosts that are, you know, living up to the reputation. But most ghosts aren't bad. And that's one of the things that people don't really talk about. Most of them are just spirits.
That's
are lost, you know. Part of my whole reason for writing the story was because I wanted to separate African American science fiction from European science fiction, and in the African tradition, our dead are our ancestors. They're not zombies. Mm-hmm. They're not evil. They're not any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to write
right.
a story where it shows that difference.
Right, right. Exactly. Are you there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, I was saying, are you thinking about doing a film on Negro Mountain?
I actually talked to a couple of film producers. I want to do it right. Negro Mountain started off as a screenplay, and I ended up writing it into a book. So that's always been the goal. And I was actually talking to some people back in December, and looks like it's real possible. I submitted the screenplay to Monkey Paw, which is Jordan Peele, the one who made Get Out. He put out a call for screenplays, so I submitted Negro Mountain, so maybe he could come in and help me with it. If not him, then maybe somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully I can. I mean, my third movie, we're in negotiations for straight to video and hopefully getting it in the Walmart.
A ghost story film in general?
Yeah, my third film is called Death Pledge. And that's
mm-hmm.
we shot that last year. And I'm in negotiations for that to be released. Hopefully that'll be out. I'm trying to get it out by October, but these things take a long time, especially when, you know, you're independent. When you're independent and you have to make all of the connections, it's a lot of work.
I don't know. Somehow my call dropped.
Oh, okay. Huh. Well, you didn't get disconnected.
Right, exactly. It just dropped like that. I'm glad I was able to call back in.
Oh, good, good, good.
So, yeah, I was saying, and writing in general ghost story films. Oh, yeah, you were saying about the one who wrote the movie Get Out, and then we were saying, you were saying something else.
Well, I submitted the screenplay of the death it happened on Negro Mountain to Monkey Paw to see if I can get it distributed.
Yes.
I mean, if you produce it. I mean, they put out a call for independent filmmakers
mm-hmm.
or screenplays, horror,
mm-hmm.
and I got one. So I'm in the conversation, and it's already a good story. The book has really good reviews on Amazon. If you get a chance, you can check
mm-hmm.
it out. And it's been out for maybe 6 years now, 7 years, 2019. So I think it came out in 2012. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it's one of my top sellers. I just had to order more copies of it because we sold out over Kwanzaa. I got to get more books in Martin Luther King weekend. I think I got one or two books left.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's one of my hot sellers.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, give people a different look at certain things, you know, where they get to see things a little different.
That sounds really beautiful. I hope it works out for you, that they accept you.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I mean, I not necessarily quit my jobs, but I did, take time off from my last job as a teacher and invested some time in this. So things are working out. I mean, every time I think I'm stressed out, something happens that makes it even better than what I would have predicted. You know, I had a bunch of distributors that were talking to me back in November, and now I'm down to just three, and it turns out to be the one of them, which was like one of the last distributors to talk to me, is probably the best distributor deal I've ever got. So I'm amazed by it. So, just being patient. But if you had talked to me back, man, right before Christmas, I was stressed because I was like, oh, my God, what are these distributors going to do? And, you know, the holidays is approaching. If I don't talk to them before the holidays, I may not hear back from them in the new year. You know, but it turned out right now it looks good. So I don't know. Right now I will be happy once the movie comes out. I mean, I want to make another movie in the next month, but I tell you, I'm struggling even finish writing the screenplay because I'm struggling on, you know, finding the relaxation that this movie is going to come out. So once it, you know, we're signing contracts and everything looks legit, I'll be more relaxed and I can write another movie and stuff like that. Because it's really hard.
True. So they're going to actually produce your writings into a film where people could go to the movies and watch it?
Well, that's the goal. But nowadays, since the streaming services have really popped up, Hulu and Netflix and Amazon,
right,
even YouTube is in the conversation. It's really hard to, you know, the bar of movies and theatrical release is really high. And, you know, unless I'm making a superhero science fiction story where I got Kevin Hart and Idris Elba in it, I don't even want to go to the theaters. I'd rather be on television. I'd rather be on Netflix or BET, you know, because I think people will appreciate the quality of my story more than if they were to go and try to see it in an IMAX, where you need CGI, where you need big stars to be in it, because otherwise it's like Michael B. Jordan did three movies last year, but people only know Black Panther and Creed. They don't remember he self-produced this sci-fi picture called Ken, you know? And if Ken would have come out on Netflix, it would have been ridiculous. But it did make $5 million in the theaters. So the possibility of them making $5 million, I don't know if they'd have made $5 million on Netflix.
Right, right.
But, you know, people are talking about this movie, The Bird Box. And, you know, if that...
Yeah, my daughter told me I should watch that.
Yeah, people are watching it because they got Netflix. But if that movie would have came out in the theaters, it would have been trashed. It would have been out of the theaters in 1 week. But on Netflix, because people have the subscription and they're not really having to pay for it, it is existing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you're going to get like the, of course, Negro Mountain maybe could be on should be on the film. And what about like the robot and the time travel book?
Yeah. I mean, you're getting me excited. I would love for actually all of them to be brought to film, but I will be happy if any of them. I mean, the comic book stories too. All of those comic book stories have screenplays to go along with them as well. If any of those stories get picked up. But, another part of my goal is once I get this film deal signed, we're bundling the deal where I'll be able to produce more movies of my own myself. So, even if they're not going to theaters and I can get them going to YouTube or I can get them going to, get them going to Netflix or somewhere, I will be happy. So I'm not theater or two movies went straight to Blockbuster and Hollywood Video. So and one of them sold well at Walmart. So I'm not even stressed.
Was that movie?
Yeah, my second movie, Gold Digger Killer. It was called Gold Digger Killer.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie did very well in Walmart. So I don't have to go to theaters to make my money because my budgets are so low. So if I can get to Netflix.
So if I wanted to do a film night, how could I get to your films to film it at, like, just say a community center that I'm affiliated with up in Dania Beach?
Oh, let me know. I own them. So anytime we can do it, let's talk. I have all my films here. The Death Pledge, we haven't screened it yet, so depending on when, but as far as my first and my second film, that's no problem.
I'm thinking like during Black History Month, and then
that's fine.
Rent one of those popcorn machines, and you know, have like a $2 bag of blue popcorn for sale and some blue chips for sale. Like, keep it healthy eating, but then they're watching a movie. It's like if they was in a movie theater, but they're getting a different style of snacks, more healthier snacks,
yeah,
and then they're watching a film or whatever.
Let's do it. I mean, I always tell people Gold Digger Killer is a very entertaining picture, and it definitely speaks to this Me Too movement and this R. Kelly stuff and a lot of the things that we're going through now. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the movies that I would suggest. My first picture is called Holler If I Kill You, and that's about a comedian that has a fall from grace, and people start getting killed in the nightclub. Like, just imagine.
But this is a real movie. This is like a real movie with real people acting in it.
Oh, yes.
This is a real film with people acting in it.
Yes, live action, no joke.
Well, let me know when you need some extras or you need a star actor. He's laughing. I'm serious.
Oh, no, trust me. Both of my movies had a bunch of my friends in it. My second movie, you, all my friends, is like a high school reunion when I screen that movie.
You got to make a movie where Real Radio Talk will have a part in it, you know? Like, someone's on the radio doing an interview and something big happened. You know, I don't know. I'm just...
I'm
just brainstorming right now. I can't even get it together.
No, that's fine. That's not beyond possibility. So, no joke. I mean, I once I get to my regular groove and I have people that I can work with and things like that, a lot of things are possible. Shooting down here, my first two pictures were shot up in New Jersey. And I have...
Oh, that's fine. I'll come to New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, so shooting down here in Miami, I had to pay people and I had to make friends. So it was a little different. But as I start making more stories, shooting more, I'll have more friends.
Right.
So it's
exactly.
Good to know you. Thank you for this opportunity.
It's good to know you, too. Good to know you, too, you know. I should be telling you that, good to know you.
Well, it's definitely mutual. We have to bridge these gaps. There's too many gaps in our world now. So we got to connect with each other. People don't go out and talk as much as they do. Look, it's Friday night. My son is still here. He's down there on the video game playing the video game.
That's 16, all right. You know where he at?
Yes, at 16, my parents didn't know where I was.
We were always busy. I know I was as a teenager. They're kind of lame, these teenagers. They're very lame. They don't walk. They don't play like we used to traditionally play outside barefooted to the street light come on, walk to the pool,
yep.
Walk to the mall, walk to other neighborhoods, to another county. If we could do it, riding our bikes way out of reach, as long as we get home before that street light come on.
Yep, get on the bus. What?
Get on the right. We play double dutch. We play hide and go seek. We play kickball. Everything.
You
making
name
mud
it.
Pies.
Yep. Yep. These kids nowadays, there are kids that go out, no doubt, and those kids are usually ones that get in more trouble. But for the majority, a lot of kids are staying inside now. And I don't know if it's for the worse. My
technology.
Son is in shape. He doesn't eat bad. He eats better than me. So I can't really say it. But I knew how to basketball, baseball, football, you name it. Right? Bowling, wrestling, you name it, all that. But my son, I think he plays basketball, and that's the only sport that he can play.
We should write a sci-fi book on how this generation is, but make it more like futuristic in a sense. You know, like you're in the future, but all they do is just stay home and play games and watch videos, and you know, and they have like a flashback where there was a time where children would be in the woods playing, in the street playing. You know what I'm saying? Going to the arcade, have house parties, all that good stuff. So, like, which one is better, the future or the past? Seems like the past was better than the future. Is better than the future.
Yeah. Those are all important things. I mean, with writers,
see, because this
we
is
try
the thing.
To.
Okay, go ahead.
No, it's just that we try to address all those things. Everything you're saying in there, you know, we try to build these analogies to speak to the times that we're living in. So, yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
Because this is the thing, the community center that I know you know Elder Kwame, right? Oloshula?
Yes.
Kwame Oloshula? Okay, me
he's
and
in Fort
been networking. No, he lives in Miami.
Okay,
he was responsible for bringing Infidishi from New York about 2 weeks ago. Remember when we was at the community center and you had your table set up where we met you at?
Yes.
Right. He's the one who...
I think he invited me to another Kwanzaa in Opa-locka.
Mm-hmm.
There was another Kwanzaa last Saturday, so I think he invited me there. But, yeah, no question. Let's make it happen. Where's your community center you were saying? The one you want to show movies at?
Yeah, it's in Dania Beach, and I was talking to one of the organizers and the person in charge, and, you know, I was mentioning movie night to him and stuff, and he was like, he seems like he was pretty much in agreement with doing it. It's an American Legion Hall for, you know, like ex-veterans. So they have like a, I think it's called Post 9 American Legion Hall, and it holds up to 125 people. It has a bar that could be converted into a juice bar, and it also has a kitchen. It has a little stage area where the actual film screen maybe perhaps could be set up, and it has bathrooms, and it could hold up to 125. He wants to bring events there. The center, you know, moving with some meaningful educational stuff going on, because one minute things are going on, then the next minute it's dead. It's like an up and down vibe there, you know. So with a space like that, you know, I'm just coming up with ideas that could be done there, you know.
Well, I'm all for it. Let me know. Like I said, I have my films, so my films are available anytime you want to screen them. And I do a question and answer, and there's a whole lot, you know, a whole bunch of other things that I can do to keep those things going on.
How long are your films?
About an hour and 15 minutes. And the one that I have now, The Death Pledge, it's an hour and 25 minutes, depending on the edit. I don't know how the distributor is going to edit it down or what they're going to do. But they may cut a scene or two. I cut it down to about an hour and 15 minutes, a little longer, about an hour and 18 minutes myself. But I don't know if they're going to cut it down.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see. They got to, like, take some parts out.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. They, you know, when you sign with this distribution company, things have changed over the years. They don't let you show certain scenes like they used to show. So you got to be careful, and it's really hard to know. But at least when you do finish your film, you can always edit it. You know, you can always edit your film. So shoot it, and if you got to edit it out, edit it out. But if you don't shoot it, you won't have it if you needed it. So shoot it anyway.
Yeah. And do you have like an actual film projector with the screen?
I could probably get one.
Because that screen is kind of old school, so they really haven't. They're in the process of renovating, like trying to get internet access, and they have a television with a DVD player to do little presentations like that. But what me and you are talking about is definitely going to need a, if it's film night, it has to be a film projector with a screen. You know what I mean? Or even if it's on the wall or something.
I think, you know, I should be able to get one of those. I don't even know if the library rents them, but there's a way to get a projector. I think, and I even have.
I saw one at Walmart the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't with the screen, it was just a projector. I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
Yeah, so even if you were to get something like that and returned it after the event, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But no, I think.
But it'd be better to
just
keep it. It'd be better to keep it because if it's something that you want to do on a continuous basis, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because having a film night at that center, like, let's say once or twice a month, they'll look forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That would be hot. Give the kids something to do.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be for all ages, right? Like, grown-ups, adults, teenagers, children could attend. And then you can be there vending your books and whatever, and other vendors could be there, too.
Yep. It depends on, I guess, what the film is that you're showing. My film, my first film, they're both horror movies, so it depends on people want to show the kids. Yeah, the second one, Gold Digger Killer, is a little bit more, I would say rated R.
Okay. So they would have to have parental guidance with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would really have to do some real strategic, exquisite marketing and advertising. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when a few people have got together and they played Hidden Colors 3 at the Betty Ferguson Center, and the place was packed.
Yes, I was there for that one.
You right. So that's the type of feedback I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. Since you was there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That type of vibe. Yeah, so there was something else I was going to say about filming. Oh, yeah. So, there's a place in Orlando. I don't know if you're open to go to Orlando, but there's a place in Orlando called Three Masks, and they hold a lot of events there, and it's very spacious. They have like different rooms for different size types of events, and every third Saturday they have a black marketplace where everybody that owns businesses, they come there and they set up their stuff, and then they also have maybe like a guest speaker or some kind of lecture or presentation going on. And Landscurve Media normally is there on, it's normally there recording it and stuff like that. So, and then on Monday, I think it's every Monday, they have something that they do there too, pertaining to black marketing and stuff like that. So it was like every third Saturday and then every Monday. So it could be set up where it might not have to be that third Saturday or that every Monday, but it could be like a weekend if you could, if you wanted to go up there and do a film night there. Like show maybe like how many films do you have all together?
Well, two are out and screenable. The third film I'm still waiting on the distribution. So
okay.
I would say two right now.
Okay. Right, and they're both 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Mhm.
Right, so like I said, like if you went there for a weekend, a Saturday and a Friday and a Saturday, or a Saturday and a Sunday.
Right.
You know, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You'll say Friday you play the first one, Saturday you play the second one, and Sunday will be like for ones who missed it, Friday and Saturday you could play both films that same day and then have your table set up with your books and book signing and da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot that could happen, you know. Because it's a well conscious, concentrated area up there in this particular part of Orlando, and I think they would receive that well. Because, you know, then no one's really running into black sci-fi like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have film projector. And they have a big room with a kitchen part and a bar area where they serve beverages and stuff like that. And then the other sections they have where they sell clothes and incense and oils and furniture and African masks and statues and jewelry. You know, it's like really, it's a beautiful place to host any type of event. And it's spacious. You know what I mean?
Well, let me know. If you want to do that one first or the other one at the lodge, I'm available. Let me know.
I think the Orlando one will work good, will work better because they're already in an establishment. The lodge will work, but like you said, they're in the process of innovating, getting internet service in and doing certain things. But and I know Jonathan be very busy sometimes, so I don't want to overwhelm him with stuff, but I'm going up to Orlando on the 18th. And coming back on the 22nd, and I can talk about it then, and then possibly call you, or if you can make it to Orlando during that time, that'd be great too. And then we can plan for February because, like, if you're there in person, you get to see the place, get to talk with the owners,
mm-hmm.
meet Lance Scurf Media, the one who's affiliated with my radio. He links his radio station with mine, so whenever I'm on. Tonight, I guess he was busy, so he wasn't able to. Come on, but nevertheless, yeah, you get to sort things out and see what's going on for your own self, other than me just telling you. Go down to Pre-Mass, see how the place is set up, and see where you can fit in doing something like that, like once a month, like having that actually on your calendar. Once you start getting your films distributed and out there, you know, you'll have something to show them. They'll know, oh, he's coming with this new film out or whatever, or his new book is out and he's doing a book signing and stuff like that.
Well, I have two films. Let's see what we can do. I mean, I'm open to it all. You know how I live down here in Miramar, so I have to travel up there. So.
So,
you know,
when
the
interview
works, we're taking
the mega bus
on the 18th. Yeah, let's make it happen.
Oh, yeah. So are you available on the 18th?
Hold on. That's,
is that Martin Luther? There's no school on that day because it should be Teachers Planning Day. And then that Monday, there's no school because it's Martin Luther King's Earth Day. So it'd be that Friday, Saturday, mm-hmm. Sunday, Monday. It'd be like a 4-day weekend for school.
I'm showing a concert, Tony, that night. I got to check with my wife. That 18th?
Was Friday
night? Yeah.
Yeah, January 18th.
Yes. They're showing that.
Tony, where they going to be at?
In Miramar. So I got to find out what the situation with the wife is. Other than that, don't really have anything. I know I have the Martin Luther King Day Parade on that Monday, the 21st. There's a science fiction event.
Maybe that next weekend will be better.
The 25th? I don't know what I have on the 25th. But if I'm only near one of my calendars, so when you let me know, I'll look it up with my other calendar and I'll check with my wife and see what I have going on.
Well, let me know if the weekend of the 18th is good or that weekend after. You just let me know what you can do, and then I can call them and arrange it.
Okay. And would be a day or evening?
Well, I guess if it's on the weekend, I guess you could do like a late afternoon matinee film show. Huh?
I'm talking about the meeting.
You mean the meeting to go up to Orlando?
Yeah, that would be in the day or in the evening.
Well, it probably would be in the daytime, depending on what their schedule looks like, but I can see it happening in the daytime. It'd be nice to meet in the morning when the day is fresh.
That works for me.
Because, you know, you need to see how the place looks, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that.
Well, I'm available.
So you just check your calendar and let me know, and then we can get it set up. Because I know on the 18th we're going up there to talk about doing a black business retreat type of thing, or I should say a event, or people in that area, and then me and a sister from New York is going to go. Everybody's going to set up their setup, and we're still like planning it, so I don't really want to prematurely talk, but that would be something that you could be a part of, and we were thinking about doing it in March because they have that spring break in March for like a week. So we were thinking about doing it around that time.
Okay.
So
I know few people in Miami, and I know even less in Orlando, so I have to have somebody else, you know, coordinate or be, you know, really try to get the crowd out, because I don't know enough people to say put an event together myself up there. But I can definitely bring.
Well, they're already well known in a sense. So, you know, it's just a matter of the advertising, letting them know that you're going to be there, and then, you know, the first time it might not be big, but then the more you come, the more they get familiar and the word gets out, and then it just starts growing like that.
And what's the name of the place?
It's called Three Masks in Orlando. You'll probably do a quick Google search. Three Masks, like three masks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah,
when we finish, I'm talking on my phone, and I don't have my computer with me. So when we finish, I'll go to my computer. My son is on his thing. My wife is watching TV, so I went somewhere else.
Right. Okay, no problem. Yeah, well, it's 8:31 anyway. I don't know if you have anything else you would like to talk about. I want to give you time to look into the three masks thing, and I do thank you for coming on the radio.
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't, you know, this is the last time. So if you think of stuff, let me know. I'm available for all these screenings that you're interested in. And then, of course, with this Orlando, I'm going to check and see, you know, what I can do. But I might even be able to check it out online. So there we go.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you very much. It was good talking to you.
Same here. Let me ask you a question real quick. Have you ever did a film night at someone's actual house?
Actually, no. I did a showing of my film at my house, but not somebody else's.
Would you be open to it?
Yeah, I'm not a problem.
Okay, because one day in February for Black History Month, I would like to have it a filming at my house, and then that could open up the gate for the community center up there in Dania Beach. You know what I'm saying?
Not a problem. How many people fit in your house?
I would say maybe if we have some chairs in a row, rolled out or whatever, and have the film projector and the screen facing one wall, and then the audience are facing the screen. It could be about four rows, maybe about 20 people.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You
know? I mean, that's fine. But yeah, let me know the date on that. Would you be charging for that? You know,
of course.
Okay. One of the things you
could charge like a small fee, and then you could charge a small fee, something like what?
Yeah.
I don't know, $10 or something. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. You know, my books are $15, right? If everybody was to buy a book, which is a little bit more than a ticket, but if they were to buy a book, I would show the movie. And they wouldn't have to pay anything extra. They can get a copy of a book. You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the book of the movie, but, you know, that's just a thought. Just throwing it out.
They do it like this. Either they buy a book, and if they don't want to buy a book, then they just got to pay whatever price we have set to pay to watch the movie, which will make them say, I might as well buy the book. You know what I'm saying? So we'll say the movie is like $12. And then you're having them buy a book that might be $10 or $8. I don't know. How much are your books? Because we got to make it make sense.
Yeah, the books are from $10 to $15, and I have a nonfiction book, which is $20. But if they want, you know, however you want it, run it around, throw it out, see what's up. But, yeah, that's a way to, you know, they'll get something for their money. If not, you know, they could just come in for the fee, like you were saying, if it was $10 or whatever.
Right. And then you can have some refreshments to sell, too, because that's also another way to make money for the next time we do it again, to make it even better, like the blue popcorn I was talking about.
Hey.
You know, bottled water, $1, the popcorn, $2.
That works.
So for Black History Month, we definitely need to be doing something like one day during the week and on a day out of the weekend, because it's Black History Month, so we want to take advantage of that time, and that's how we can get more advertising and marketing out there, because of people is looking for stuff related to Black History because it's Black History Month. So that's going to be right up their alley, you know? That will set the stage for future things.
Yeah. Well, let me know. Set it up. Let's make it.
So what date is good for you? Want to do it that first Friday in February?
It may be possible.
Maybe the second Friday, because then we got to have time to advertise it.
The 8th, it may be possible. Let me throw it out to my wife, because if I try to set something, I don't know what she got going on. But, yeah, the 8th sounds possible if that gives you enough time.
Yeah, and then maybe that next weekend could show your second film. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And maybe 15? By then. She's already already done linked up with the Orlando Vibes, and maybe has be prepared to go to Orlando to do something for Black History up there, or already have been there.
Okay.
We'll be going back to Orlando in February on the 23rd and the 24th. There's a sister coming down from Georgia. She's a comedic Reiki healer, and she's mm-hmm. going to be doing a presentation at 3 Mass on the 24th of February. But we're trying to get her to come here for the 22nd or the 23rd to do a workshop, like a lecture. And then from there, we go to Orlando.
All right. Well, send me an email with those dates. The 8th sounds real good at your spot. I have to check on the 15th, but the 8th seems doable. And then whatever
the
date we
decide. The 8th is a Friday, right?
Orlando. Yeah, the 8th is a Friday.
Okay. And, you know, you can set up an Eventbrite webpage, right? You can go on Eventbrite and set up a webpage where they could purchase the ticket off of Eventbrite, you know?
Yep.
Purchase tickets off of Eventbrite or buy a book, you know what I mean? They can purchase tickets in advance or whatever the case is. Yeah, you know? But we got to definitely organize how we're going to make it make sense, you know? So if it's going to be a $15 book that you're going to, that they can buy, then that means the tickets will have to be more than the book. You know what I'm trying to say? For it to make
yep.
sense for them to buy the book.
Right. Something like that.
Or, you know, if you have it, you buy one book and you get one half price. You willing to do
right,
that?
Right.
They buy a book and get a book
yeah.
half price?
Yeah, because it'll still come out to the same amount of money.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly. Right. But then I got two books, you know, for the price of one in a sense. They'll be looking at it like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, you get the ticket, you buy a ticket for $5 and the book is only $10 or something like that.
I like that.
So
mm-hmm.
You know, you could put
right.
your ticket price to the price of the book, and you get the movie for free. You get to watch the movie for free, and you get to buy a book, or else you just pay them to get to see the movie, right? So that works.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So we'll have like
so,
two
yeah,
different options for them to choose from, two or three different options.
Yeah.
And then you can autograph it and everything.
No question.
And then do a question.
I'll do that.
Then do a question and answer after the film. Do a question and
yep.
answer.
Trust me, Gold Digger Killer will be a good conversation.
Mhm. So you got to work on getting some more films so we can have more film nights.
Yeah.
Because between my house and the community center and Dania Beach and the center there in Orlando, we can get a lot of filming going on.
Well, I tell you, it ain't just my your house that I'm going to get these films done for, but I appreciate it.
No, I didn't just say my house. I said my house, community center, there in Dania Beach, and the one in Orlando.
Yep. Well, hey, I'm open for all of them. So it ain't.
It ain't just those three places.
Yeah. It. The goal is to keep making films, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the point. Exactly. No matter where you're having them, but I'm just saying there's locations, so you need the films.
Yep.
To put in the locations, that was my whole point. Not to just have
okay.
it at my house, just that was the point.
Well, thank you very much.
So I'll email you some potential dates and you just let me know.
All right. Not a problem.
Okay. Have
All
a
right.
blessed night.
Well,
thank you for calling.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, you have a blessed night as well. And, I'll be in touch and see you on the email.
All right.
All right.
Okay. Love and gratitude. Peace.
All right. Peace.